Hello, my name is Isaac Keith Martinez, and welcome to Isaac's Haunted Beard. Today we're going to talk about Death Proof from the year 2007. This is about a serial killer whose weapon is a car. He's an ex-Hollywood stuntman who drives a car that's death proof, so he can kill people while driving it without dying. Okay, I know you've already seen this movie, so let's talk about it without assuming that you didn't. Now, this film was originally the second film in the Grindhouse double feature, the first one being Planet Terror. You remember that in 2007. There was a movie called Grindhouse that was released in theaters, but it was actually a double feature. It was two movies. It was a film by Robert Rodriguez called Planet Terror and a film by Quentin Tarantino called Death Proof. Now, Death Proof and Planet Terror, for the record, were released overseas as single features. And that's because in non-English speaking countries, they didn't have grindhouses and double features were not a tradition there. So they didn't really, I guess, understand the concept. Or I don't know, maybe they do, but for whatever reason, Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez and Dimension Pictures decided to release them separately. And when these films, Planet Terror and Death Proof, were first released on Blu-ray and DVD, they were released as standalone titles in longer running times than they were when they were originally screened together collectively as the film known as Grindhouse. Now, eventually, they did release Grindhouse, which for a lot of us fans of Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino, we bought the movies three times, right? We bought Planet Terror, then we bought Death Proof. That's twice. That's two separate purchases. And then we bought Grindhouse because, well, let's face it. People can say, I wanted to preserve the, or re-experience the, what it felt like to see Grindhouse in the theater. But no, we all bought it again for those fake trailers. There were some fake trailers that were really cool and funny that were in between the movies. And our first opportunity, to see those trailers again was to buy Grindhouse. Now, we're not going to talk about Grindhouse. We're going to talk about Death Proof. I'm sorry for getting a little off track here. So let's just talk about Death Proof. Now, I watched this recently, and, you know, there's some things that, it's not like I just noticed them. I guess I'm just reminded of them. One of them being that this movie is told in two parts. This film is in two parts. The first part of the movie takes place in Texas, and Stuntman Mike, who, as you know, is the lead character, the villain, the serial killer, played by Kurt Russell, is stalking a group of girls, a DJ named Jungle Julia and her friends. And the second part of the film takes place in Tennessee, where Mike is stalking a group of women who are in the entertainment industry. When we hear these ladies talk and they talk about their experiences working on a film, we learn that some of them are stunt women, which is very important to the plot. I know one's a model, and I'm not sure who Rosario Dawson's character Abernathy was. Was she like a makeup artist? I'm not certain. I don't remember. One of the things that really stuck out to me that I noticed was that the first part of the film, the part that's in Texas, visually is very scratchy, and the second part's not. Now, when I say scratchy, you know what I mean by scratchy, right? It looks like an old movie in that it looks like you're watching actual 35 millimeter film that's being projected onto a screen with all the original scratches that would be on that print. Now, when you watch an old movie on Blu-ray or streaming, you know, it's usually, you know, it's restored. So all that stuff's been cleaned up digitally, so you don't see those scratches. But all those scratches would have been there if you saw it, you know, in its original exhibition, like at a drive-in or at a grindhouse. This movie, like all of Quentin's films, was actually film on 35mm film. And Quentin Tarantino did, in fact, scratch up the actual film by hand. So all those scratches are real. However, the second half of the film isn't scratched at all. It's perfect. So the first half of the movie kind of feels like, and it makes sense, like aesthetically, that it would have scratches, because Planet Terror has scratches throughout the entire film. But curiously, Death Proof only has scratches in the first half, not the second. So I found myself wondering, why did Quentin Tarantino make that choice? I have a theory. I'm going to share it with you. I'm not certain that this is the reason, because when you share film theories, one of the things you have to wonder is, did the filmmaker have the same idea that you had? And even if they didn't, it doesn't necessarily make your theory less valid, you know, because once the movie exists, whatever it means to you, I mean, no one can take that away from you, right? That's just how it exists in your mind. So this is my theory. And like I said earlier, I am assuming that you've seen the movie, so I'm going to touch upon spoilers here. As we know, Stuntman Mike succeeds at killing the first group of women that he's stalking in Texas. But he doesn't succeed at killing the second group of women that he was stalking in Tennessee. So, to me, the first half of the film feels, and I can't necessarily explain why, it just intuitively feels more dangerous with those scratches there, as though you can sense danger. There's something about those scratches that visually suggests something really bad is going to happen and we can't stop it. So we just kind of accept it and go with it, right? Maybe you might have a tense feeling that you can't shake. Maybe you don't know why. It's those scratches. The second half of the film, those girls don't get murdered. He, as you remember, originally goes after them and they turn it around on him and they go after him and they get him. So the first girls, they die. Second girls, they live. So the second half of the film, when the girls live, by not having those scratches, I feel like that danger is removed. Now, I'm sure that when you're watching that scene in the final act of the movie, where there's the car chase, there's still a lot of tension there, especially because at first, it's a little hard to see Zoe Bell on the hood of the car while Stuntman Mike is banging into them, because you don't want her to fall off. You get nervous, you get scared. As you know, she doesn't fall off. She doesn't die. And eventually, they turn it around and chase him. And they catch him. And they, you know, do they kill him? I think it is suggested that they do kill him, because they beat him up. And then at the end, you see, I believe it's Abernathy, who lifts her leg up and drops it on his head. So I'm pretty sure that's the death blow. So the good guys win. The good girls win. And there's just something about not seeing those scratches that make me feel less nervous, as though the second girls will somehow survive this. I don't know, granted, I've seen this movie, you know, enough times to already know that. It's not like I forgot, but still, I'm just trying to explain to you why I think the first half of the film is scratchy, besides the fact that it's trying to capture the old aesthetic of the, you know, old 70s grindhouse exploitation films. And the second half, it's not like that, even though it's the same movie. And also, interestingly enough, visually, there is a portion in the middle, a bridge between the first half of the film and the second half of the film, that's in black and white. And the black and white part's not scratchy at all, but it's that transition from scratchy to non-scratchy that has that black and white bridge that connects them. And I find that interesting. I don't really have a theory why it's black and white for a little bit, other than the fact that I think it's black and white just serves as a visual representation of, okay, things are going to change now. We're going to go from this look to this other look. And there you go. That's my theory. I don't necessarily believe that that's specifically what Quentin Tarantino had in mind, but I think it's a not bad theory. I mean, do you guys have any theories? Maybe you've never thought that you should be theorizing about such a thing, and maybe you never noticed that the quality of the print changes halfway through. If you didn't before, you will the next time, because I spend so much time talking about it. You know, I know there's a lot of people out there who wish that Quentin Tarantino would make a horror film. And I would argue that Death Proof is a horror film. Now, it's not a traditional horror film, but if you look at all his other movies, none of his movies are traditional examples of whatever genre he's doing with that movie, you know? I've heard him say that this movie is his slasher film, and that he tried to think of a way for his slasher to be different from all the other slashers. It's very difficult to come up with a new spin on the slasher genre. And I think one of the main things that people try to do when they make a new slasher film is come up with a unique weapon that their slasher has that nobody else's slasher has. So, you know, a car's never been done before. That's the weapon. Now, I can't argue with the director because that's his intention. But as a slasher movie fan, I do love slasher films. I would argue that, not argue, I don't want to get into an argument with anyone about this, especially Quentin Tarantino. Figure of speech. I would argue that it's not a slasher film, and that a big part of the slasher genre is using a weapon that can pierce the body. That's why slashers don't use guns. They don't shoot people. They use knives or other types of sharp instruments, you know? And I don't really feel, as a slasher fan, that I'm watching a slasher film when I watch Death Proof. And that doesn't bother me. I don't, you know, I don't care. Just because QT, Quentin Tarantino, just because QT says it's a slasher film and I don't necessarily see it as one, or it doesn't feel like one to me, it doesn't mean that that in any way takes away from it. Another thing about slasher films is you don't spend as much time with the slasher as you do with Stuntman Mike. And Stuntman Mike spends a lot of time with his victims in the first half of the film, and that's definitely unheard of. Like, he has conversations with them. You don't have, I mean, the closest you're going to get is Freddy, who doesn't really have conversations. He just has moments where he tells jokes. I mean, that's close enough because he's speaking, but, you know, a lot of the slashers typically are silent. You know, I don't need a slasher to be silent. Slashers can talk, you know, for the record, even in the Slumber Party Massacre films, the killer talks. So it's not a rule that you can't talk. But to really, like, engage with your victims and have conversations with them before things change, before you have your moment where you're gonna kill them, that's definitely non-slasher like. But I still see it as a horror film. Now, a little different from your average horror film. You know the film Race with the Devil? Have you ever seen that? It's from the 70s with Warren Oates and Peter Fonda. That's kind of what this film feels like. It's a horror film slash kind of chase film, you know, because cars is a big part of this plot. Second half of the film, there's a lot of conversation about cars because the girls work on movies. Three of them are stunt women, and they do stunts with cars, and they name drop a lot of car movies, like the old school Gone in 60 Seconds and Vanishing Point and Crazy Mary, Dirty Larry. You know, they're naming all these car movies, movies that are famous for stunts and fast driving. So, like with a lot of other QT films, I think it's a hybrid. I think it's part horror film. I think it's, I guess, part slasher film, if you really want to go along with what QT insists, and part car film. I don't really know what to call those movies. Chase films? Because there's definitely a chase. Quentin Tarantino was hanging out. This is a story that I've heard. Was hanging out with Sean Penn. And they were talking about cars. And Quentin was talking about, I'm going to mess up the first part of this story, which isn't important. What's important is the second half of the story. Quentin was talking about safety with cars. Like, what is the most safe car? Because he was actually genuinely had, like, I don't know if a phobia, but somewhat of a concern, at least, about what types of cars were safe and what types of cars were not safe. And he wanted to make sure that he had a car that was safe because he didn't want to ever get into a car accident and die. He wanted to survive whatever car wreck he may accidentally get into one day. And Sean Penn said, you can make any car safe if you give it to a stuntman, because a stuntman has a team that can deathproof a car. They can do things to a car to make sure that it can survive any wreck. And that is the first time Quentin Tarantino ever heard the phrase deathproof. And it's been stuck in his head for many, many years, because I heard that this conversation might have even happened as far back as, like, I want to say Reservoir Dogs days. Maybe Pulp Fiction, I'm not sure. When Quentin and Robert Rodriguez decided to go ahead and make this grindhouse picture, and Quentin was describing his concept to Robert, he brought up the idea of the deathproof car, and he uses that phrase, deathproof. He says, okay, so this guy has a deathproof car. And then Robert Rodriguez stops him and says, oh, you got to call your movie deathproof. So there you go. Robert Rodriguez is responsible for naming the movie deathproof. I have a question for you. If you were to show this movie, deathproof, to a person who's never seen it before, how would you do it? Would you show it to them as a standalone film? Or would you show it to them within the context of the film Grindhouse? I don't even know how to answer that question myself, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. I mean, you know, I don't actually expect you to answer. You can. Anytime I pose a question on this podcast, you're welcome to contact me on Twitter and continue the conversation. I do actually am curious. I do enjoy talking to people. I would like to know your answer. It's similar to the Star Wars question, right? How would you show someone the Star Wars films if you wanted to? If they've never seen it before, would you show them in the order that they're released in theaters? You know, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9. Or you show them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. My answer has always been I'd show it to them the way they were released theatrically because of the mysteries that are revealed and the shock, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean I would show someone Death Proof. I think it would depend on the person. I think if the person, if I feel like they would have genuinely gotten more out of seeing it as a part of Grindhouse, I think I would show them Grindhouse. But if they were just interested in just seeing Quentin Tarantino's movies for the first time, which I think I would just show them in the order that they were released, I would show them Death Proof by itself, you know? I'd explain to them, you know, how it was originally released. Give them maybe just that. Explain to them and let them decide, right? That seems like the cool thing to do. How do you feel Death Proof works within the context of Grindhouse? Because Planet Terror is paced differently. It's so wild and fast-paced and violent and got a lot of special effects. It's really hyper. When you see it in the theater that first time, it almost makes Death Proof feel boring, right? But then after that theatrical run was over and they released Death Proof by itself, you know, I find myself watching Death Proof by itself more, not as a part of Grindhouse, which allows Death Proof to have its own identity to me, which allows me to appreciate it as its own film. And I do, actually, I mean, because I'm admitting to you, it was a little bit of a letdown because in my mind, Planet Terror led me to believe that Quentin's film would be as quickly paced. Like it was just going to be one amazing evening of hyperactive filmmaking. But Death Proof slows it down. Which is funny to say because when you think about that final car chase, it's so crazy that, you know, it's funny to think of that movie as slow, but no, obviously it has a lot of talking in it, right? Which some people hate, but I'm fine with it because it's Quentin Tarantino dialogue. And if you're a QT fan, it's something that you appreciate and you expect it. But yeah, and I've seen Death Proof more times than I've seen Planet Terror. Isn't that weird? Because I remember that night leaving the theater thinking Planet Terror was more fun. But since then, I have watched Death Proof more. I feel like I've gotten more out of Death Proof, and it's really growed on me. I see where he's going with it. I don't really understand if that was the intention to have one really fast-paced film and one really slow-paced film. Like, for some reason, that was the intent. But now it doesn't matter because I bet most people watch them as separate viewing experiences. There's a part in the second half of the film where you listen to the girls talk about their lives, their job. They work on a movie. You get the idea they're talking about a specific movie. And they give all these anecdotes about what it's like to work in the movie. I have this theory that the movie they're talking about is Kill Bill. Zoe Bell is one of the girls. She's a stunt woman. She's Uma Thurman's stunt person on Kill Bill. And the character of Lee made out with a grip who is nicknamed The Rock. From what I understand, there really is a grip on the film Kill Bill that the crew nicknamed The Rock because they look like The Rock. and Abernathy's love interest had sex with Daryl Hannah's stunt double, and Daryl Hannah is in Kill Bill. And the ringtone on one of the girls' phone was the whistling tune from Kill Bill. And their car was called Lil Pussy Wagon. And the truck in Kill Bill, as you remember, was Pussy Wagon. Which means that Kill Bill and Death Proof do not exist in the same universe, because one would be a movie and one is supposed to be real life. But it still exists in the same alternate universe that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood exists, if we are to assume that Stuntman Randy, who is played by Kurt Russell in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is the father of Stuntman Mike and Stuntman Bob. Is this the only movie where Kurt Russell plays a villain? I bet he's played a villain in other movies. I'm just not a Kurt Russell expert. All the memories I have of him is as a hero. This is the only Quentin Tarantino film that is in chronological order, and there's no flashbacks, because as you know, his movies go all over the place. So that's something to keep in mind the next time you see it. It just has a different feel from his other movies. Here's a story. Records, which are big now, made a comeback, right? Vinyl is huge. Records cost about $30 if you go into a record store, right? More or less, $30. I've been collecting records for a long time. I remember when new records, because, you know, even before vinyl was big again, they were still making new records. They're about $20 back then. I never really remembered when it crossed over from 20 to 30. That's a big jump, right? $10. But it was around the time Death Proof, the soundtrack, came out, because I remember going into a record store and seeing the Death Proof soundtrack and being shocked that it was $30, and even giving the guy who worked behind the counter a hard time about it, which isn't usually my style. It was just like, couldn't believe it. I was like, why is this $30? This seems wrong. He's like, and the guy seemed like confused, like, I don't know. He's like, did you want to buy that? I'm like, yeah, but not for $30. He goes, I'll sell it to you for $20. I'm like, sold. I do like this movie. Like I said earlier, it grows on you. I revisit it more than Planet Terror. And I think that I think it's more than a grindhouse film. It's kind of like, I don't want to call it an art film, but I guess the point, you know, this is going to be a cheesy cop-out, but I guess it just is what it is. It's a Quentin Tarantino film, and his films are a hybrid of all different types of genres, and you put them all together and they kind of take on their own personality that's unlike anything else. And now we haven't really touched upon too much new ground, no like incredibly hot takes with this episode, but hey, what can I say? I watched this movie recently and stuff's been on my mind. I hope if you haven't seen this in a while, you'll consider revisiting it, because it's aging really well, like a lot of his movies, and it has a very timeless feel to it. So there you go. I'm recommending that you revisit Death Proof, just because it's a good movie and it's worth checking out again. Thank you for spending time with me. I look forward to hanging out with you again soon, talking about a different movie. Until then, may all of your rides be death proof. Aloha.